Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're talking about Chapter 13, Part 1 of The Enormous Room. Can anyone offer a summary of this chapter so far, and why do you think Cummings says he was happy in the prison? Decrific said, why do you think Cummings says he was happy in the prison? That's a very interesting question to speculate about. I suspect it's an amalgam of many contradictory and complex feelings. He's a young man with an anecdote he can live on for years, maybe even write a book. Oh yeah, he did write a book. He's an observer, and he got to sojourn in a human zoo where the best and worst of humanity was on full display. He got to experience something most people never do. Perhaps for the first time in his life, his preconceived notions were challenged and he came out changed by it. He met people from all walks of life, social classes, languages, etc., and with hindsight, whenever he conjured up that enormous room in the room of his mind, those memories must have been fertile soil for his subsequent writing. Those few months in captivity were very likely incredibly formative in his thinking. Although he gives a blasé impression about the whole thing, we can perhaps chalk it up to the kind of bravado men of that era was supposed to display in any and all circumstances. We are for each other then, laugh, leaning back in my arms, for life's not a paragraph, and death, I think, is no parenthesis. E. Cummings, Since Feeling is First, 1926. Nifty-rific said, that poem, the tidbit you shared, and it in its entirety, is very nice. Agreed. Thank you very much, Tech-rific, for that. I Am Norwegian said, a summary of the chapter so far. Cummings is walking around in a fog after losing his friend. He was just going through the motions mechanically. B's departure had a big enough impact on him that his depression was obvious to the other prisoners. Excuse me. And they tried to help him out of it. Even the surveillant developed a soft spot for Cummings in this chapter. I did too. At times, Cummings has felt like an ungrateful brat, but lately I've found myself liking him. Why does he say he was happy in the prison? Many of those who go through military training come back and remember those times fondly, even if they were absolutely miserable during the exercises they are reminiscing about. I think the same might be happening here. Alternatively, Cummings might have just been happy in prison, a simple existence with people he liked. All right, now, here's what we're going to do. We are going to finish reading The Enormous Room right here, right now. Let's go. After a few more questions, I signed some papers which lay on the desk and was told by Apollyon to get out. When can I expect to leave? I asked the surveillant. Oh, it's only a matter of days, of weeks perhaps, he assured me benignantly. You'll leave when it's proper for you to leave, Apollyon burst out. Do you understand? Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, I replied with a bow, and exited. On the way to the enormous room, the black holster said to me sharply, Vu elle est partie. Oui. He gave me such a look as would have turned a mahogany piano leg into a mound of smoking ashes and slammed the key into the lock. Everyone gathered about me. What news? I have asked to go to Oleron as a suspect, I answered. You should have taken my advice and asked to go to Cannes, the fat Alsatian reproached me. He had indeed spent a great while advising me, but I trusted the little machine fixer. Parti Jean Le Negre, said with huge eyes, touching me gently. No, no, later, perhaps not now, I assured him. And he patted my shoulder and smiled. Bon. And we smoked a cigarette in honour of the snow, of which Jean, in contrast to the majority of L'Homme, highly and unutterably approved. C'est joli, he would say, laughing wonderfully, and next morning he and I went on an exclusive promenade, I in my sabots, Jean in a new pair of slippers which he had received, after many requests, from the bureau. And we strode to and fro in the muddy cour, admiring la neige, not speaking. One day, after the snowfall, I received from Paris a complete set of Shakespeare in the Everyman edition. I had forgotten completely that B and I, after trying and failing to get William Blake, had ordered and paid for the better-known William, the ordering and communicating in general being done with the collaboration of Monsieur Peters. It was a curious and interesting feeling, which I experienced upon first opening to As You Like It. The volumes had been carefully inspected, I learned by the secretary, in order to eliminate the possibility of their concealing something valuable or dangerous. And in this connection, let me add that the secretary, or if he not he, his superiors, were a good judge of what is valuable, if not what is dangerous. I know this because, whereas my family, several times, sent me socks in every case enclosing cigarettes, I received invariably the former sans the letter. Perhaps it is not fair to suspect the officials of La Ferté of this peculiarly mean theft. I should possibly doubt the honesty of that very same French censor whose intercepting of B's correspondence had motivated our removal from the section sanitaire. Heaven knows I wish, like the three wise men, to give justice where justice is due. Somehow or other, reading Shakespeare did not appeal to my disordered mind. I tried Hamlet and Julius Caesar once or twice and gave it up, after telling a man who asked Shakespeare, who is Shakespeare, that Mr. S. was the Homer of the English-speaking peoples, which remark, to my surprise, appeared to convey a very definite idea to the questioner and sent him away perfectly satisfied. Most of the timeless time I spent promenading in the rain and sleet with Jean Le Negri, or talking with Mexicu, or exchanging big gifts of silence with the Zulu. For Oleron, I did not believe in it, and did not particularly care. If I went away, good. If I stayed, so long as Jean and the Zulu and Mexicu were with me, good. Mais en fut pas mal. Pretty nearly summed up my philosophy. At least the surveillant let me alone on the sui mim topic. After my brief visit to Satan, I wallowed in a perfect luxury of dirt, and no one objected. On the contrary, everyone realizing that the enjoyment of the dirt may be made the bias of a fine art, beheld with something like admiration my more and more uncouth appearance. Moreover, by being dirtier than I usually was, protesting in a to me very satisfactory way against all that was neat and tidy and bigoted and solemn and founded upon the anguish of my fine friends, and my fine friends being my fine friends understood. Simultaneously with my arrival at the summit of dirtiness by the calendar, as I guess, December the 21st came the black holster into the enormous room, and with an excited and angry mien proclaimed loudly, "Les Américains, allez chez le directeur de suite." I protested mildly that I was dirty. "N'y importe, allez avec moi." And down I went, to the amazement of everyone, and the great amazement of myself. "By Jove, wait till he sees me this time," I remarked, half audibly. The directeur said nothing when I entered. The directeur extended a piece of paper, which I read. The directeur said, with an attempt at amiability, "Alors, vous allez sortir." I looked at him in 11/10 of amazement. I was standing in the bureau de Monsieur le Directeur du Camp de Triage de la Ferté-Métier, Orny, France, and holding in my hand a slip of paper which said that if there was a man named Edward E. Cummings, he should report immediately to the American Embassy in Paris, and I had just heard the words, "Well, you are going to leave," which words were pronounced in a voice so subdued, so constrained, so mild, so altogether ingratiating that I could not imagine to whom it belonged. Surely not to a fiend, to Apion, or to the Prince of Hell, to Satan, to Monsieur le Directeur de Camp de Triage de la Ferté-Métier. "Get ready, you will leave immediately." Then I noticed the surveillant. Upon his face I saw an almost smile. He returned my gaze and remarked, "Aha, aha, aha, oui." "That's all," the director said. "You will call for your money at the bureau of the gestionnaire before leaving." "Go and get ready," the fencer said, and I certainly saw a smile. "I am going to Paris," somebody who certainly wasn't myself remarked in a kind of whisper. "Per faintment, petit Apollon. But how changed? Who the devil is myself? Where in hell am I? What is Paris? A place, a somewhere, a city, life, to live, infinite, present, first, singular, I live, thou livest. The director, the surveillant, La Ferté-Métier, Orny, France, Edward E. Cummings will report immediately. Edward E. Cummings, the surveillant, a piece of yellow paper, the director, a necktie, Paris, life, liberty, la liberty, la liberty." I almost shouted in agony. Dépêchez vous, savez vous, vous allez partir de suite. Quitte après midi pour Paris. I turned so suddenly as almost to bowl over the black holster and all. I turned toward the door. I turned upon the black holster. I turned into Edward E. Cummings. I turned into what was dead and is now alive. I turned into a city. I turned into a dream. I am standing in the enormous room for the last time. I am saying goodbye. No, it is not I who am saying goodbye. It is, in fact, somebody else, some possibly myself. Perhaps myself has shaken hands with a little creature in wizened arm. A little creature in whose eyes tears, for some reason, are with a placid youth, Mexicu, who smiles and says shakily, "Goodbye, Johnny, I no forget you," with a crazy old fellow who, somehow or other, has got inside B's tunic and is gesticulating and crying out and laughing with a frank-eyed boy who claps me on the back and says, "Goodbye and good luck to you." Is he the young skipper by any chance? With a lot of hungry, wretched, beautiful people I have given my bed to the Zulu, by Jove, and the Zulu is even now standing guard over it, and his friend the young Pole has given me the address of mon ami, and there are tears in the young Pole's eyes, and I seem to be amazingly tall and altogether tearless, and this is the nice Norwegian who got drunk at Bordeaux and stole 3 or 4, was it, cans of sardines, and now I feel before me someone who also has tears in his eyes, someone who is in fact crying, someone whom I feel to be very strong and young, as he hugs me quietly in his firm, alert arms, kissing me on both cheeks and on the lips. "Goodbye, boy. Oh, goodbye, goodbye. I am going away, Jean. Have a good time. Laugh wonderfully when la neige comes, and I am standing somewhere with arms lifted up. Si vous avez un lettre, sais-tu il fait rire. For if I find a letter on you, it will go hard with the man that gave it to you to take out. The black holster even does not examine my baggage. Wonder why. Alas, Jean's letter to the Gonzes in Paris, still safe in my little pocket under my belt. Ha ha, by God, that's a good one on you, you black holster, you very black holster. That's a good one. Glad I said goodbye to the cook. Why didn't I give Monsieur Auguste's little friend, the cordonnier, more than 6 francs for mending my shoes? He looked so injured. I am a fool, and I am going into the street, and I am going by myself with no planton into the little street of the little city of La Ferté-Macher, which is a very little city, in France, where once upon a time I used to catch water for an old man. I have already shaken hands with the cook and with the cordonnier, who has beautifully mended my shoes. I am saying goodbye to Les Deux Belliers. I am shaking hands with the little, very little machine fixer again. I have again given him a franc, and I have given Garibaldi a franc. We had a drink a moment ago on me. The tavern is just opposite the gare, where there will soon be a train. I will get upon the soonness of the train and ride into the now of Paris. Now I must change a station called Brios. Did you say goodbye? Mes amis et bonne chance. They disappear, pulling and pushing a cart. Les deux belles de mescules. By Jove, what a tin noise is coming. See the wooden engineer, he makes a funny gesture, utterly composed silently and entirely of Murdy, Murdy, Murdy. A wee tiny absurd whistle coming from nowhere, from outside of me. Two men opposite jolt, a few houses, a fence, a wall, a bit of a niche float foolishly by and through a window. These gentlemen in my compartment do not seem to know that Le Miserie exists. They are talking politics, thinking that I don't understand them. By Jesus, that's a good one. Pardon me, gentlemen, but does one change at the next station for Paris? Surprised, I thought so. Yes, monsieur, the next station. By hell, I surprised somebody. Who are a million, a trillion, a nonillion young men? All are standing. I am standing. We are wedged in and on and over and under each other. Sardines. Knew a man once who was arrested for stealing sardines. I, sardine, look at 3 sardines, at 3 million sardines, at a careful carful of sardines. How did I get here? Oh, yes, of course. Briouze, horrible name, Briouze, made a bluff at riding Duke's class on a Triosme class ticket, bought for me by Le Duc Bellius. Gentlemen in the compartment talked French with me till conductor appeared. Tickets, gentlemen, I extended mine dumbly. He gave me a look. How? This is third class. I looked intelligently ignorant. Il ne comprend pas frais, says the gentleman. Ah, says the conductor. T's is I thordi class ticket. You are in T second class. You will go into TT3D class, will you? Yes, please, at once. So I got stung after all. Third is more amusing, certainly, though. God damn hot with these sardines, including myself, of course. Oh, yes, of course. Poils and permission. Very old, some. Others mere kids. Once saw a planton who never saw a razor, yet he was a reformery. C'est legri. Several of us got off and stretch at a little tank town station, engine thumping up front somewhere in the darkness. Wait, they get their bidons filled. Wish I had a bidon, a disc donc bidon n'est ce pas fait pas ten frères. Who sang or said that? Peep, we're off. I'm almost asleep all myself. What's the matter here? Sardines writhing about. Cut it out, no room for that sort of thing. Jolt, Paris. Morning, morning in Paris. I found my bed full of fleas this morning, and I couldn't catch the fleas, though I tried hard, because I was ashamed that anyone should find fleas in my bed, which is at the Hotel de Saint-Pierre's, whither I went in a fiacre, and the driver didn't know where it was. Wonderful. This is the American Embassy. I must look funny in my pelisse. Thank God for the breakfast I ate somewhere. Good-looking girl, Parisian. At the switchboard upstairs. Go right in, sir. E. English by God. So this is the person to whom Edward E. Cummings is immediately to report. Is this Mr. Cummings? Yes, rather a young man. Very young. In fact, Jove, I must look queer. Sit down. We've been looking all over creation for you. Yes? Have some cigarettes. Yes? By God, he gives me a sack of bull. He gives me a sack of bull. Extravagant they are at the American Embassy. Can I roll one? I can. I do. Conversation. Pleased to see me. Thought I was lost for good. Tried every means to locate me. Just discovered where I was. What was it like? No, really. You don't mean it. Well, I'll be damned. Look here, this man B. What sort of a fellow is he? Well, I'm interested to hear you say that. Look at this correspondence. It seemed to me that a fellow who could write like that wasn't dangerous. Must be a little queer. Tell me, isn't he a trifle foolish? That's what I thought. Now I'd advise you to leave France as soon as you can. They're picking up ambulance men left and right, men who have got no business to be in Paris. Do you want to leave by the next boat? I'd advise it. Good. Got money? If you haven't, we'll pay your fare. Or half of it. Plenty, eh? Norton Arias, I see. Mind going second class? Good. Not much difference on this line. Now, you can take these papers and go to No Time to Lose, as she sails tomorrow. That's it. Grab a taxi and hustle. When you've got those signatures, bring them to me and I'll fix you all up. Get your ticket first. Here's a letter to the manager of the Compagnie Generale. Then go through the police department. You can do it if you hurry. See you later. Make it quick, eh? Goodbye. The streets. Les rues de Paris. I walked past Notre Dame. I bought tobacco. Jews are peddling things with American trademarks on them because in a day or two it's Christmas, I suppose. Jesus, it's cold. Dirty snow, huddling people, la grurie, always la grurie, and chill. Goes through these big mittens. Tomorrow I shall be on the ocean. Pretty neat the way that passport was put through. Rode all day in a taxi, two cylinders, running at one. Everywhere with waiting lines, I stepped to the heads and was attended to by the officials of the great and good French government. God, that's a good one. A good one on le gouvernement français. Pretty good. Les rues sont tristes. Perhaps there's no Christmas. Perhaps the French government has forbidden Christmas. Clerk at Norton Harges seemed astonished to see me. Oh God, it is cold in Paris. Everyone looks hard under lamplight because it's winter, I suppose. Everyone hurried. Everyone hard, everyone cold, everyone huddling, everyone alive, alive, alive. Shall I give this man 5 francs for dressing my hand? He said, anything you like, monsieur. Ship's doctor probably well paid, probably not. Better hurry before I put my lunch. Or inspiring stink, because it is the bow. A little member of the crew immersing his guess-what in a can of some liquid or other, groaning from time to time, staggers when the boat tilts. Merci bien, monsieur. That was the proper thing. Now for the... Never can reach it. Here's the premier class. One, any port in a storm. Feel better now. Narrowly missed. Now for the never can reach it. Here's the premier class. One, any port in a storm. Feel better now. Narrowly missed American officer, but just managed to make it. Was it yesterday or the day before? Saw the Vaterland. I mean the what deuce is it? The biggest afloat in the world boat. Damn rough. Snow falling almost slid through the railing that time. The snow is falling into the sea, which quietly receives it, into which it utterly and peacefully disappears. Man with a college degree returning from Spain, not disagreeable sort, talks Spanish with that fat man who's an Argentinian. Tinian? Tinnish, perhaps. All the same. In other words, tin. Nobody at the table knows I speak English or am American. Hell, that's a good one on nobody. That's a pretty fat kind of a joke on nobody. Think I'm French. Talk mostly with those three or four Frenchmen going on permission to somewhere via New York. One has an accordion, like a second class. Wait till you see the gratte-ciels, I tell them. They are we. You don't, and don't believe. I'll show them. America, the land of the flea, and the home of the dag. Short for Dago, of course. My spirits are constantly improving. Funny, Christmas, second day out. Wonder if we'll dock New Year's Day. My God, what a list to starboard. They say a waiter broke his arm when it happened. Ballast shifted. Don't believe it. Something wrong. I know I nearly fell downstairs. My God, what an ugly island. Hope we don't stay here long. All the red bloods first class, much excited about land. Damned ugly, I think. Hello. The tall, impossibly tall, incomparably tall city, shudderingly upward into hard sunlight, leaned a little through the octaves of its parallel edges, leaningly strode upward into firm, hard, snowy sunlight. The noises of America nearingly throbbed with smokes and hurrying dots which are men and which are women and which are things new and curious and hard and strange and vibrant and immense, lifting with a great ondulous stride firmly into immortal sunlight. And that's the end of the book. We finished it. Holy magloly, everybody. Well done. That's the end of The Enormous Room by E.E. Cummings. Well, I suppose now it's time to ask you to have your say about the whole novel. So tomorrow's discussion, or the discussion that will immediately follow this podcast, will be the final wrap-up kind of conversation. So reflect on the chapter, but also reflect on the whole book. Let us know how you felt about it. Let's get a little conversation about it going. Chuck some questions in. Maybe think of some of your own prompts. And I'd hate for us to move on to the next book without having a good conversation about this one. So please do try to not only just answer the prompts, but also try to do a little prompting of your own for the other participants, if you would be so kind. All right. Thank you very much for listening. Tomorrow we'll be starting Anna Karenina, which I'm really excited about. So what will happen tomorrow is there'll be a wrap-up episode, and then after that there will be a chapter one reading episode, and that's when we'll start the reading of Anna Karenina. Very exciting stuff. All right, thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.